The clock, and we will start the meeting. As always, we will have a moment of silence followed by the Pledge of Allegiance. Mr. Crawford, could we have the roll call, please?
Certainly. We have Eric Davidson.
Here.
Karina Higgins. Here. Mike Hill. Sonia Hurt.
Here.
Ryan Lopez.
Here.
Richard May.
Present.
And Mary Lou Stewart.
Here. Mr. Hill is out of town, so he didn't ask to be excused, obviously. Okay.
Is that obvious?
All right. Then we'll go on with our presentation, Gordon Thomas Honeywell, Government Affairs Legislative Update.
They're not here.
All right, Holly, you are ready to go.
Thank you. Okay, can everyone see this slide? Great, okay. Good evening, everyone. I'm Holly Sanabria, state lobbyist for the city. It's great to be with you all tonight. Sorry I could not be there in person, but I'll be providing a report on the 2024 state legislative session. And before I get started, I wanted to note that in addition to this presentation, there is a written report that was sent this morning that goes into more detail on all the issues I'll cover and provides a more comprehensive overview of what occurred this session. So with that, let's get started. So I plan to cover three topics for tonight's update. The first is an overview of the 2024 session. The second is drilling down into the specific outcomes of the city's legislative priorities, which we developed prior to session as a set list of priorities that we would spend the bulk of our time advocating for. And then I'll wrap up with some next steps as we prepare for the 2025 legislative session. So just to provide some context, the legislature operates on a two-year cycle that aligns with the state's biennial budgets. This year was the second session of the 2023-25 biennium, meaning it was the short session of the two, lasting 60 days, beginning on January 8th and ending on time on March 7th. For a short session, the legislature focuses on adopting supplemental budgets. They make amendments or adjustments to the previous budgets that passed in 2023, and this includes the operating, capital, and transportation budgets. There were a little over 1,100 bills introduced during the 2023 session that were not passed into law and were carried over for consideration during the 2024 session. And in addition to those bills that were carried over, an additional 1,560 bills were introduced. And of these, the legislature passed 376 bills into law. The Democrats continue to hold the majority in both the House and Senate. And the new dynamic that existed in this short session was the introduction of six initiatives to the legislature. The initiatives are bills that are sponsored by the people of Washington and are ideas submitted to the legislature for their consideration. The legislature has three options when presented with an initiative. They can adopt it as presented, they can adopt a different version, and both the original and the legislature's version go on the ballot, or they can take no action and the initiative goes directly to the ballot. For three of these initiatives, the legislature chose to adopt the following as presented: the vehicular pursuits, which allows an officer to engage in vehicular pursuit if they have reasonable suspicion that someone has violated the law. This is essentially a rollback of the legislation passed last session. parental rights around medical, academic, and disciplinary information on their children, and prohibition on state local income tax, which local governments do not impose income taxes that are now prohibited. For the remaining three, the Climate Commitment Act repeal, long-term care opt-out, and capital gains repeal, they chose to do nothing and let the voters decide in November. So with that quick recap, I'll share a bit about the budgets. As I mentioned, there are three budgets the legislature focuses on, which are the operating, capital, and transportation budgets. The short session is dedicated to passing supplemental budgets, and this is when they make adjustments for the within the biennial budget. And when the legislature comes back in 2025, they will start this two-year cycle over again for the 2025-27 biennial budget. Moving to the first budget, the operating budget is the largest of the three. It funds all state agency operations, with the largest expense being the K-12 education system. The February revenue forecast, which is the forecast that was used to develop the supplemental budget, predicted a $1.2 billion increase in state revenue beyond the level expected when the biennial budget was adopted. The supplemental budget allocated an additional $2.1 billion, bringing the biennial operating budget to $71.9 billion. I think that's helpful to recognize that the biennial budget was $69 billion and the supplemental was $2 billion. So that's how small of a budget the supplemental is compared to the underlying budget. One significant outcome of the supplemental budget for many local governments is an elimination of the 25% cost share requirement for jurisdictions sending new recruits to the Basic Law Enforcement Academy. That will take effect in the new state fiscal year starting July 1. It also includes $34 million allocated to local governments for homeless housing programs and services. Moving on to the capital budget, this budget funds public and nonprofit construction projects, excluding transportation, and structurally it's funded by bonds that derive from a portion of the operating budget. The supplemental budget is $1.3 billion, bringing the biennial budget to $10.3 billion. The additional capacity primarily comes from the Climate Commitment Act, federal funds, and the Model Toxins Control Account, and there was very limited remaining bonding capacity for the supplemental. Because much of the revenue comes from the Climate Commitment Act, much of it is not available until January 2025 and is contingent on the failure of Initiative 2117. There was $72.5 million allocated to local community projects, which is the category the city has received funds through in the past. The size of awards in a supplemental year is traditionally very small, and this year was no exception. Considering there are 49 legislative districts, each district received roughly $1.5 million. Notable investments in the supplemental capital budget include $127 million for the Housing Trust Fund and over $100 million in behavioral health facilities around the state. The transportation budget funds the state transportation system, which includes highways, ferries, active transportation, transit, and all transportation-related state agencies. This was by far the most constrained of the three, and budget writers had the greatest challenge agreeing on this budget. The supplemental budget allocates an additional $1 billion, bringing the biennial budget to $14.6 billion. Most of this new spending is directed to a handful of areas, including cost overruns on two mega projects, that's the 520 Bridge and I-405, the fish barrier removal, and capital improvements to ferries and highway preservation. The new spending comes from federal funds, Climate Commitment Act revenues, and Advanced Move Ahead Washington revenues. And again, with much of the spending coming from Climate Commitment Act dollars, it's not available until January 2025 and is contingent on the initiative failing. Traditional transportation revenue sources, the gas tax, licenses, permits, and fees are down by 8% since the biennium began. So a lot to unpack here, but this is just a really quick rundown of the supplemental budgets that passed this session. So on to the city's legislative priorities. The first is Bell Road, SR 548 Grade Separation Project. As you all know, the city now has the funding to get to 30% design of the Grade Separation Project. And this came from a combination of funds, including the state's appropriation that we were able to shift over from the previous project plan to the new project plan last session in 2023. I also saw the city release an RFQ today for design and right-of-way work for this project, so that was great to see and would be an item to update the delegation on once you all have approved the contract later on this summer. It also gives us some further direction on how best to move forward in terms of formal state funding request. Since the legislature was not taking any funding requests this session, we used the time to continue advocating for the project and providing an update to the delegation on the status. Committee assignments do change every biennium, but if Senator Shoemake and Rep. Timmons continue to serve on the transportation committees, it will only help elevate the project. Next is the downtown mixed-use affordable housing project. This project is at its infancy stages, and it was the perfect timing to share the news with the delegation and to really prepare for a funding request in 2025. So that's what we did. The delegation is excited and wants to help in any way they can. They are aware that we plan to make a request in 2025 when budgets will be developed and we have an increased chance of securing a higher level of funds. And then the city will also be working on coordinating a time for the delegation to come and see the site sometime during the summer or fall. So we'll be looking forward to that. The next is fiscal sustainability. There have been many attempts at reforming the state's cap on property tax growth. This year, the primary vehicle was Senate Bill 5770, which was a carryover bill from 2023 session. The bill would have removed the 1% cap on property tax growth and tied it to inflation, capped at 3%. Mayor Stewart testified before the Senate Policy Committee during the public hearing for the bill, and along with several other elected officials throughout the state. It made its way through the Senate committee and was expected to be voted on the floor, but a large push of opposition came the day it was brought, or was expected to be brought to the floor. And it was basically stopped in its tracks. I'll also add that any type of legislation that has tax implication and receives public resistance isn't likely to move, especially in an election year. So there was a lot of optimism that it would make headway this session, but nothing is predictable during the legislative process. It's likely it'll be picked up again next session, and our efforts will continue though. As for, and so lastly, we've got the industrial land and infrastructure support. And as the Metro Vancouver area is facing an industrial land shortage, there is an opportunity for the city to attract businesses in need of space. And although this the city has land, it doesn't have necessarily the infrastructure built out to create shovel-ready space. The city supported a new grant program that the governor had initially requested in his proposed budget to the legislature, and the final budget includes $25 million for this grant program. However, it's contingent upon Initiative 2117 failing. So final steps. As you all know, and maybe you don't know, but hopefully we'll prove to you that lobbying is seriously a year-round effort. And the accomplishments made thus far have required preparation and advocacy throughout the year. We have set ourselves up for this time and time again and are continuing to do so. We've seen how effective it is, and it is also greatly appreciated to have you all engaged throughout the year. So a few next steps as we move forward and we prepare for the 2025 session. My advice is to always begin with gratitude. Legislators put their lives on hold for 60 days to do the necessary work of adopting budgets and refining laws, and recognizing their sacrifice goes a long way. Whether you see them when you're at an event or around town, please go out of your way to thank them for serving the city and the state. I saw that Senator Shoemake and Rep. Timmons are holding community chats next week on the 13th, with one of the locations being the Birch Bay Chamber of Commerce. So a great opportunity for the community to connect with them. Next, there are several state agencies that are charged with implementing grant programs for various purposes. Over the next several months, application windows will be opening up, and the state agencies will then make recommendations to the 2025 legislature on what projects should receive funding. And to be competitive for any funding requests in the 2025 session, It is my strong recommendation that the city apply to applicable grant programs this year. This includes for the Great Separation Project, the mixed-use downtown project, or even projects that could potentially be prioritized in the future. Even if we're not successful, it demonstrates that the city is taking advantage of opportunities before coming to the legislature for a direct appropriation. As part of our preparation for session, my job is to help the city develop an interim action plan and next steps to continue to elevate top priorities and prepare for the 2025-27 biennial budget development and the 2025 session. And between now and the next legislative session, there will be a campaign cycle where the entire House and half the Senate is up for re-election. We will also have a new governor and several other changes to statewide elected office and potential impacts to state budgets if any of the three initiatives pass. There are a lot of unknowns about next session, but what we do know is the legislature will have to develop new biennial budgets, and we want to be prepared to take advantage of any opportunities that arise through that process. And then before you know it, the 2025 legislative session begins on January 13th, and it'll be the first year of the new biennium. And to prepare for that session, we'll need to update the city's legislative priorities. And with that, I will just say it is an honor to advocate for the city, and thank you for the opportunity to be a part of the team. It's been a joy. Thank you so much. And happy to take any questions, or if you think of any at a later time, please don't hesitate to reach out.
Are there any questions from the council?
I have a few. In relation to the Green Jobs and Infrastructure Cadillac funds, final budget includes $25 million for the program. Is there anything that you would recommend the city start doing today to maximize the amount possible we could receive?
Well, so yes, local governments are able to apply to this grant program. I would just say start thinking about possible land that could be highly scored in this grant program. The only problem with that is we don't know how they're going to score this grant program, and they won't share that until probably they know the outcome of the initiative. So I think we'll have more detail at the beginning of next year, and we can start getting the ball rolling.
Okay, and then I just had one more. Although there was overwhelming opposition to the proposal of raising property tax cap from 1% to 3%, do you see state legislators continuing to push for this in 25?
I do. It also depends on if it has been commonly a more Democrat push. So if politically they do well in the election and they maintain a majority in both the House and Senate, I think that they could have another chance. If seats change up, it could be a lot more difficult to get across the finish line.
Okay, thank you.
Rena?
Thank you. When you were talking about the mixed-use affordable housing project as part of the 2025 legislative request, does that
I'm sorry. I only heard like the beginning portion, and then I got a little muffled.
What I'm asking is, in the 2025 legislative request concerning the mixed-use housing proposal, does that include any consideration for the library?
That'll be all up to you.
That's what I thought.
So
okay.
That's something we can have a discussion about throughout the interim.
Okay. And then one other question. In your slide that was talking about the supplemental budget, there's a notation about $2.8 billion in reserves. Is that taken from, added to, or what is in the current reserves? That wasn't clear to me from the information.
So $2.1 billion in additional spending for a $71.9 billion biennial budget.
What I'm asking,
$2.8 billion in reserves.
In reserves total. Okay.
Thank Correct.
You. Okay. That was it.
Okay, Holly, thank you very much. Doesn't seem as though there are any further questions, so thank you for your presentation.
Of course. Thank you.
Okay. Moving on now to a very wonderful part of our meeting will be the oath of office to Officer Devin Cooper. There he is. Okay.
Congratulations.
Okay, thank you very much, Devin. Moving on then to the consent agenda, items listed below will be enacted by one motion. If separate discussion is desired on an item, that item may be removed from the consent agenda and placed on the regular agenda at the request of a council member. Approval of bills, $267,315. Approval of wire register, $635. Approval of advance pay, $8,597.68. Approval of payroll, $701,604.75. Approval of March 25, 2024 City Council meetings. Can I have a motion to approve the consent agenda?
A motion.
Second.
Moved Lopez, seconded Davidson. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? That is passed 6-0. Council action items, police utility vehicles. Lieutenant Green? Okay, Mr. Harmon, please.
I'll take it. So in this year's budget, we have budgeted the acquisition of two squad cars via a lease. When running the numbers on it, the lease is not the most financial are not the best financial option for the city. And so we're asking council permission to amend that to actually make the purchase of the vehicles, which will happen probably in October. We have to put the order in on the state fleet account today with a delivery of probably October or November for these two squad cars. And instead of leasing them, we'd like to buy them outright because it comes at a cost savings to the city of approximately $30,000 over the course of 5 years.
Are there any questions from anyone?
Since we're going to own the vehicles, there's an anticipation that we could locate them beyond the 5 years, that if so needed, they could be 6, 7, 8 years, just depending, correct?
Madam Mayor.
Mr. Harmon.
Yeah, that's correct. Instead of turning the vehicles back at 60,000 miles, not only can we keep them longer, we're planning to take the vehicles that are in the PD now and move them over to Public Works to be used for seasonal, summer help, that kind of thing. It's really a win-win for the city on both sides.
And as far as maintenance goes on that, that's not going to be a problem, you know, because it'll be so new, right? Maintenance is not going to be a big financial problem that would offset the lease.
Madam Mr. Harmon.
What we find with city-owned, or excuse me, city patrol cars versus deputy versus trooper, we have a lot of in-town miles, and so at about 100,000 miles, they start to break down and be problematic when they're used for law enforcement. But we can move them over to Public Works, and then we just monitor them, and at the point they start to have some serious issues, that's when we'll surplus them or do a cost-benefit analysis of whether it makes sense to keep them or not.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions?
Who does the repair work on our police vehicles?
Madam Mayor.
Go ahead.
It depends. Sometimes our mechanic does it. Oftentimes we'll take it to Ford and Bellingham and have them do it. If it's a specialty item, we may take it elsewhere for that specialty repair to have happen. It depends on what's broken.
Okay, could I have a motion to approve the purchase of the police vehicles, please?
So moved.
Seconder?
Second.
Davidson and Lopez. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? That is passed 6-0. Contract with Destination One for recruitment of employees for the city of Blaine. Mr. Harmon.
Thank you, Mayor. In conversations with Zeal Bain and others regarding our difficulty recruiting line workers and a finance officer, he suggested that I take a look at Destination One, a firm that has access and over 13 years experience recruiting in the municipal market in Canada and the United States, specifically with line workers. This firm, like I said, has not only placed line workers, but they also place a number of other positions. The city of Surrey, BC, uses them almost exclusively for their placements. I reached out to Destination One, and I had a conversation about what our needs were, specifically the fact that it's been over 5 years since the city of Blaine has been full staffed in its electric utility. As council knows, we upped the wage to $71 an hour. We're one of the highest paying electric utilities, certainly in this region and perhaps even the state of Washington. So we're competitive on the benefit side and the pay side, yet we continue to struggle to recruit line workers. And speaking with Destination One, they believe that they can help us. They have recruited line workers and finance officers and many other positions in Missouri, and their prices are very affordable. When we look at comparative recruitment efforts, $30,000 to $50,000 for a single position is pretty common, where they're willing to do a subscription model for the city where we can hire five positions to include two line workers, a finance officer, and then two other vacancies that may occur throughout the year for an annual fee of $40,000 payable in installments. So if we're not happy with the service, we can cancel this contract at any time. If we do cancel the contract, we are required to pay them 15% of any placement that has occurred throughout the year, which could be the equivalent of the contractual amount. And if we place a lineman at, say, $150,000, and we owe them 15% of their salary, round numbers, we're getting close to $20,000, $25,000 for that single placement, where we get five for $40,000 in a given year. So, coupled with the fact that our finance recruitment efforts were not successful in finding a candidate, we bring this to you for consideration to help us bring quality people into Blaine and get our electric utility and our finance department full staffed. So happy to answer any questions you'd have about this contract.
So in the write-up, Destination One guarantees the placement of recruited workers for at least 3 months. How are we reimbursed those costs in the event it doesn't work out?
Sure.
With this subscription model, if you will, they will rehire two fall-offs. And with the subscription model, it's only for 30 days. So if they place a finance officer and that finance officer leaves on their own fruition, or if we choose to part company with that individual and it's within the 30-day time period, they will rehire two positions for us under this contract. Outside of that, we would have to negotiate those fees if we move beyond the two positions that happen through fall off.
And then sticking with the theme of the linemen, do we know roughly how much we've had to pay companies like Patalco PSE to cover these gaps when needed?
Go ahead, Mr. Chairman.
The short answer is yes, we know. We have a schedule of rates from Patelco and Burke and DJ and others, but it all depends on the event. If we're calling out those companies for an outage, They will only respond with four crew members, a ground person and a truck, where we may respond with two line persons and our vehicle. So we have some minimums with these companies. And then the other component is if they're available. We ran into a situation this last week where one of our employees was out on a funeral, and then the other employee was out with a medical issue. And so we had nobody in our electric utility that was qualified to flip the switch in an outage other than the Burke, DJ Electric, et cetera. And so it's really critical that we get full staff. So it's a long answer to your question. It depends on what we have them do. It's an hourly rate per person, per vehicle, per piece of equipment, et cetera.
All right, thank you.
Is this intended to replace the city's own efforts at recruitment or supplement it?
Go ahead.
Supplement. We'll also post our normal spots, and then we'll work in conjunction with Destination One to find that person. It sounds like they do initial screenings and interviews. They present us with a panel of candidates, and then we take from there, and we'll move on to secondary, tertiary interviews, et cetera. It will supplement.
Any other further questions to Mr. Harmon? All right, could someone make a motion to approve the contract with Destination One for recruitment employees?
I so move.
Second.
Okay, Kurt and Karina Higgins, thank you. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? This is passed 6-0. Okay, we're moving on to commission, committee, and board reports, if there are any. From anybody on the council?
I'd like to report that I recently spoke with Pete Nelson at the Senior Center, and he shared some concerns with me about meetings that Mr. Harmon has had with the Parks and Rec Department. And apparently Parks and Rec desperately wants to get use of the pavilion and has made an offer to Mr. Harmon that he believes is beneficial to the city. And I'd like to point out that what has happened at our senior center in the last year has been remarkable. We've doubled the membership. It's up to 900 people now. It serves a multitude of purposes, all of the regular ones that you would expect with the senior center, plus the fact that they're adding so many more courses on technology and ballroom dancing, all kinds of things that would keep our more advanced seniors active and having their mental capability stay sharp. And his classes are full. You know, as many as 30, 40 people in each one. He's also made the whole facility available to the entire community. I mean, we've had so many different events there lately. And they've been catering to various organizations. They've done a marvelous job for Wings Over Water. They held the opportunity for us to go in and give presentations on disasters and presentations on the library. And they've just bent over backwards. Plus, they've extended the hours greatly. And they're so committed. And I understand that Mr. Nelson has been requested to submit his proposal for the facility. And I really want to point out that that facility is not to be considered strictly a money maker for the city. More than 50% of our population is over 50 years old. And there's a value to that that you just can't put money on. But I understand from Mr. Nelson that they do have resources available. And I don't know, Mr. Harmon, has he submitted his proposal yet? I know he's leaving tomorrow for a vacation.
Madam Mayor, so I'm surprised this issue is coming up and we're hashing this out in a public meeting. But regardless of that fact, it's a very complicated issue. The city used to contract with Birch Bay Park and Rec District to manage and schedule the pavilion. COVID hit. The city then partnered with the rec center to manage that facility. That contract is expired. And so we are in a month-to-month situation with Birch Bay Park and, the senior center. Birch Bay Park and Rec District did approach the city and present an option to manage that facility where they would contribute to replacing the floors with wood flooring to make it a basketball court, pickleball court, et cetera, host events that the senior center would be allowed to participate in and would be open to the seniors so they too could participate in those events. And I, as a courtesy, I reached out to Pete to say, we've got one item for council to consider because they plan to bring this to you for consideration. It would be good to have a second item for the council to consider so we can determine what is the best use for that pavilion and who should manage that, that public space. So that's what's happening in the background. Right now, I haven't seen a presentation from the senior center yet, but I would expect one.
Okay, thank you. Moving on then to department reports, city manager, please.
Just one additional item, Mayor. We did, for Councilmember Higgins, we did have conversations, the mayor and I did, about the library. We're setting that stage with them for 2025 to request funding. They're aware of it. They're also very excited about the project. So look forward to having more conversations with them in the 25 budget year.
Community Development Services, Mr. Wenger.
Yes, City Council. We, Community Development Services, had a open house, town hall style meeting today from 4 to 5:30 about downtown parking and the zoning text amendment that the Planning Commission is working on. It was a good meeting with a lot of back and forth discussion with the public and answered a bunch of questions and just provided a bunch of information to the public. So that was a success, and the proposal now will go before the Planning Commission at a public hearing this Thursday at 6 p.m. In addition, with the Community Development Services fully staffed up, we will be opening our front counter to regular hours, 8:30 to 4:30, 5 days a week. So just wanted to make that announcement. We're excited to, you know, serve the public and provide the excellent customer service that one would expect. Community Development Services in the city.
Okay, Public Works, Mr. Gandhi.
Just wanted to update the council. The RFP for Bell Road is published now. It's out today. We'll be closing on May 13th at 4 p.m. We're expecting a good amount of consultant interested in it. We just published it today and got couple of consultants already interested in asking questions. So we hope we'll have a good consultant to work on that project.
Okay, thank you. All right, there are some calendars to look at. Is there any council unfinished business? Any council new business or dialogue?
Yes, Madam Mayor, there's a per the conversations that concerned citizens in Semiahmoo had last year over the death of the fawns and the traffic speeds, the general consensus in that neighborhood was that the speeds be reduced during the fawning season, but apparently that didn't sit well, and that the traffic studies showed that people are comfortable driving much faster, and as Mr. Harmon put it, if he were an engineer, he would recommend raising the speed limit along Drayton Harbor Road. So we took it upon ourselves as private citizens to have signs made up ourselves. Mr. Harmon had hopefully remembered that he said the city would install them for us if we bought them. So I believe that Jennifer Plumbaum bought, I think, four that she will, if I don't know if she's contacted Mr. Gandhi yet about him, but then I got these that you don't have to install. These are like little political signs that you just stick in it. So these are the signs. So hopefully they're different from the yellow caution signs, and people might say, oh wow, what's that? And be more likely to look at them. And these will just be up during fawning season. And my only concern was, if Public Works is out there mowing, how they would deal with them. Could we be alerted when it's planned and we could remove them and then reinstall them, Mr. Gandhi?
How many signs are you expecting to have it?
There are four of these.
Four of these. We can pull them out, put the
Okay, that would be appreciated. Thank you.
Okay. A written public comment to the City Council is included on the City's website, so the address is there. And if there's no further new business, the meeting's adjourned at 6:40.